Deutsche Welle. Africa Link.
Hello and welcome to DW's Africa Link, the Thursday, the 19th of April 2018. I'm Jane Ayeko-Kumet.
And my name is Jane Nyinge. Lovely to have you on board. We are also streaming live on Facebook, DW Africa. If you're already there, give us a like. Coming up on the show, more than 40 African countries agree to work together in an effort to fight terrorism in the continent at a meeting in Nigeria.
In terms of working together, it's no longer an issue where each nation fights alone so that once a nation is hit, then other nations can always go in and help to ensure that terrorism is actually defeated out of Africa for good.
And Cuba's new president Miguel Díaz-Canel pledges to carry on the legacy of Fidel Castro as he's sworn into office.
Asumo la responsabilidad para la que se me ha elegido. Con la convicción.
The mandate given by the people to this legislature is to give continuity to the Cuban Revolution.
Well, these are just some of the stories that we've lined up for you. But first, here's a chance to listen to what has been happening around the world.
I'm Eunice Onjiro with DW News. German Chancellor Angela Merkel and French President Emmanuel Macron met in Berlin on Thursday for discussions on the French president's ambitious reform plan for the European Union. Speaking at a joint news conference, Merkel said Germany and France will aim to take important central decisions that are linked to a revival of Europe by the middle of the year.
We need a common foreign policy. Germany and France will talk very intensely today about what we can do to make a contribution, especially in Syria or even in view of Ukraine. And we must continue to develop our economic and monetary union. Here we have the subject of banking union, but there is also the issue of the future stability of competitiveness and all these issues.
While the two leaders agree on the need to step up protection of the EU's external borders and for a common asylum policy, it's unclear how much backing Macron can expect from Germany for his plans to reform the bloc's financial structure. Leaders from the Commonwealth, a network of 53 countries, mostly former British colonies, are meeting in London this week. It's the first time in 20 years that the meeting is being held in the British capital. Queen Elizabeth II formally opened the meeting on Thursday and backed her son, Prince Charles, to be the next leader of the association to preserve its stability and continuity. Britain's Prime Minister Theresa May is looking to deepen ties to the Commonwealth as Britain seeks to boost trade and carve out a new role in the world ahead of the country's departure from the European Union in March next year. This news comes to you from DW, Germany's international broadcaster. 57-year-old Miguel Díaz-Canel replaced Raúl Castro as president on Thursday, a new chapter for the island after nearly 60 years of rule by the Castro family. 86-year-old Castro is stepping down after 10 years in office, but his departure, which he had announced several years ago, is seen as unlikely to herald major changes in Cuba. Israelis on Thursday celebrated the nation's 70th anniversary with military honors during the ceremony. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu spoke of the need for Israelis to make sacrifices to ensure a secure future. Helicopters flew over Jerusalem and other cities, and throughout the day there were a number of military displays as many Israelis celebrated outdoors with their families. Military leaders from Africa, Europe, Brazil, and the US have joined together in an effort to strengthen regional partnerships and combat Africa's security challenges. On the sidelines of the African Security Summit held in Nigeria, US military officials said Nigerian forces battling Boko Haram jihadists need a change of mindset to overcome an evolving guerrilla threat. Boko Haram's tactics, from improvised explosive devices to hiding within the local population, necessitate a shift away from conventional strategies, said Lieutenant Colonel Sean McClure, the US defense attache in Abuja. For more news and information, visit our website at dw.com. I'm Eunice Onjiro.
You're listening to DW's Africa Link program with me, Jane Ayeko-Kumet.
And my name is Jane Nyinge. We are also live on Facebook, DW Africa. Now to our top story. And more than 40 African countries have agreed to work together in an effort to strengthen a regional partnership and combat Africa's security challenges. The meeting, which was held in the Nigerian capital, Abuja, was attended by military leaders across the continent, including Angola, Cameroon, Egypt, Kenya, and Rwanda. The five-day meeting that ended today comes at a time when Al-Shabaab is causing havoc in the east and Boko Haram continuing being a threat in the west. DW's Ben Shemang was in attendance, and he starts by telling us what came out of it.
Well, the outcome of this meeting is a kind of a resolution by the armies of various countries in Africa that they have to work together, they have to defeat terrorism, and of course, in terms of working together, it's no longer an issue where each nation fights alone, so that once a nation is hit, then other nations can always go in and help by laying a helping hand to ensure that terrorism is actually defeated out of Africa for good.
And how do they intend to achieve this, especially tackling the issue of terrorism? Because it continues to affect many countries across the continent.
Yes, Jane, the fact is that there is this thing they call intelligence gathering, that right from when some bad intentions are perceived anywhere in Africa, the armies of those countries should be able to start sharing the intelligence. The national intelligence agencies of various countries should therefore be working together. And again, talking of equipment, they should also pool resources together financially and equipment. And again, the political will, they also want these African countries not to a kind of sing different songs when indeed the common man is being killed in the streets here and there.
And Ben, why was this summit this time round held in Nigeria?
Well, it had to be Nigeria because this has been one of the strongest armies in Africa. Boko Haram, a civilian kind of a thing, ragtag, that was hiding inside the population. Now they've been able to defeat it. So they are bringing other armies to come and learn from Nigeria, how Nigeria has been able to do it. And they've been able to visit also some sites where Boko Haram a kind of struck, and they interpreted the movements. And so Nigeria is like a teaching ground where other countries should learn lessons from. And that was why Nigeria hosted it.
DW's Ben Shemang in Abuja, Nigeria.
And Jane, to that effect, we asked our audience if Nigeria should continue its military strategy against the insurgents or rather negotiate peaceful resolutions. And certainly people have been commenting. For instance, John from Cameroon says, let Nigeria trace the root cause of Boko Haram and seek a peaceful and everlasting solution, which is inclusive dialogue.
And David from Nigeria says the government in place now has never fought any Boko Haram. According to him, Boko Haram are still alive.
And Shaik from Nigeria says Nigeria will keep on telling us lies. They are not doing anything.
And Joy from Cameroon says, I prefer peaceful negotiations.
Those are comments from our listeners, from our followers who are following us on Facebook. You can also do follow the conversation and leave your comment there. But elsewhere in the world, Cuba has a new leader. Miguel Díaz-Canel was sworn in as president today. He replaces the Castro brothers, Fidel and Raúl, who were in power for nearly 60 years. The Marxist-Leninist Fidel Castro aligned Cuba with African nationalist insurgents fighting for independence from colonial powers in more than a dozen countries. Both he and Cuban revolutionary Che Guevara spent time with rebels in Africa. Cuba also supplied doctors and nurses, soldiers, teachers, and experts. It's support that continues to today. We asked Fiaz Jacobs, a former apartheid-era liberation struggle fighter from South Africa, how Africans regard Cuba now and what the leadership change on the island could mean for them. Take a listen.
We, as Africans, acknowledge and celebrate the leadership succession of the Cuban people. I think, as we all know, that there has been a long historic relationship between Cuban people and Africans, in particular South Africans. There is a combination of continuity and change. I think there is going to be, might be a new leadership style, but I think by and large, there would be continuity in terms of the type of policies and the type of relationships and the type of cooperation that we would have between the Cuban people and the African people.
Piers Jacobs, South Africa's former apartheid-era liberation fighter.
Now, Jane, the 57-year-old Diaz-Canel was sworn in by the National Assembly in Havana on Thursday. That is today. The former vice president and ruling Communist Party loyalist was voted in by 604 lawmakers. Diaz-Canel said his mandate is to give continuity to the Cuban Revolution.
Asumo la responsabilidad para la que se me ha elegido con la convicción.
The mandate given by the people to this legislature is to give continuity to the Cuban Revolution in a crucial historic moment which will be marked by all that we will be able to advance in the development of the economic and social model, perfecting and strengthening our work in all aspects of the life of the nation.
Del general de ejército Raúl Castro Ruz.
That was Cuba's newly sworn-in president, Miguel Díaz-Canel.
And from change of governance in or change in leadership in Cuba, we go to Senegal, that is also looking forward to either change of governance or change of a president. Now, Amnesty International has called on the Senegalese authorities to respect the right to peaceful protest and freedom of expression. Is this to suggest that human rights are under duress in Senegal? This is a question that I put to Franco Patuel, Amnesty International's researcher based in West Africa. Take a listen.
I'm currently in Dakar, where there was a protest organized by the opposition and civil society groups. The authorities announced that the protest would be banned. And right from yesterday evening, there was a heavy police presence in different parts of Dakar to prevent people from gathering.
So what exactly are they protesting?
The opposition and civil society groups have been protesting against two electoral bills, which would require candidates to the presidential election to collect a certain number of signatures before their candidacy can be validated. Many civil society groups and opposition groups say that this reform is untimely, as there are presidential elections being scheduled in 2019.
Now, is it a question of this proposal being untimely, or is this something that is unique to Senegal?
Certainly the timing of the law, you know, is just before presidential elections, which is a very tense political moment in Senegalese political life.
Talk about political rights. We also know that Senegal is relatively advanced in promoting political rights and allowing people to participate in politics irrespective of whether or not they actually live in the country. We know that Senegal also has members of parliament who actually don't reside there. How does this relate to the situation that is happening in the country at the moment?
Even though there has been progression and progress in Senegal's advancing human rights and protecting human rights, it's something that we need to constantly monitor. And in the field of peaceful protest and freedom of expression, there's definitely been a setback.
I was speaking to Francois Patuel of Amnesty International in West Africa.
And Jen, now going back to our top story, whereby 40 African countries have agreed to work together in an effort to strengthen a regional partnership and combat Africa's security challenges. We're still getting a lot of comments on this particular story about security in Africa continent as a whole.
Yes, I will start from another one coming in from Wama from Cameroon, who says, let Nigeria trace the root cause of Boko Haram. That one is the same as what John from Cameroon also said. They basically agree that Nigeria should find the cause and not embark on military action.
And Mimire Nke Odo says the only difference between Nigeria military and Boko Haram is just the name.
From Cameroon again, Jacobo says, fighting without a solution is a waste of time. I prefer negotiation and it will keep us going other than killing our own people.
And one last one, let Nigeria trace the root cause of Boko Haram and seek a peaceful and everlasting solution.
Very interesting comments coming in from there. Do join us on our Facebook. Africa Link is certainly live on Facebook, and you too can join the conversation. There's more than what we are covering here online. We shall bring those comments as and when we can.
If you're just joining us, welcome to the program. My name is Jane Nyinge.
And I'm Jane Ayeko-Kumet.
Coming up in this half of Africa Link, in Kenya, parents are still in shock following the rise of nudity and pornography among the teens.
If I decide to show off my body like it's mine, I will show it off till the day I die.
Interesting. We shall bring you that story later on in the program. But first, in Zimbabwe, the doctors had just ended their strike when the nurses kicked in with theirs. It is not even a week since it commenced, but the pinch is already well felt countrywide. There have been death cases reported because of the lack of nurses in hospitals, and authorities have warned that the string of strikes threatens efforts to revive the economy.
Well, on Thursday, Vice President Constantino Chiwenga sacked 16,000 nurses who are on industrial action. Columbus Mavunga visited Harare Central Hospital to find out how they are faring without nurses and sent us this report.
We have not been attended to. We are waiting for doctors to attend to us. There are no nurses. We are not happy at all. We want qualified nurses to return to work. They must give them their money. Simple. That is all we want.
Since 7 o'clock in the morning, no anything has been done. Yes, to the patients, yes.
This is now almost midday. What are they saying?
Nothing. Nothing. Seeing the patients, not looking at the patients, no. Not even giving service to the people. And the people are being turned away. The government is failing to pay the workers. They must pay the workers. That is the government's duty, to pay the workers. Yes. No need to threaten the people, no. This is a free Zimbabwe. They must pay the workers.
Those are just a few voices of some of the patients at Harare Central Hospital speaking out their agitation. With 16,000 nurses sacked, hospitals like this one depend on retired and unemployed nurses who have come in to help. Zimbabwe Nurses Association Secretary General Enoch Dongo describes the sacking of the nurses as a recipe for disaster. They are now seeking an audience with President Emmerson Mnangagwa.
We really feel shortchanged by our minister. What the nurses are asking is the hospital to be equipped with the modern equipment, to have the resources to use in the hospital. Nurses are more at risk, and they are asking for a risk allowance, which is reasonable. In the health delivery system, you find out that some other cadres, like General Hendo, they are getting money which is actually above a nurse with a degree, a nurse with a master's, or a nurse with a PhD. And that distortion, that's what the nurses are asking the government to do. And it's not the issue of additional money. It's the issue of rationalizing the already money which is there.
Nurses, like most civil servants in Zimbabwe, often go without pay for months. But Health Minister David Parirenyatwa is adamant that the sacked nurses will not be recalled.
Those who have been dismissed will be needed to reapply if they want to come back to work. And I must add that we do want our committed nurses to come back to work. We are going to mop up all the nurses that are unemployed. Us, the ones who are on strike and they come back and re-employ, they'll be taken. There's no problem with that. And the ones who are new will also absorb them. As you know, we were short of nurses anyway.
Columbus Mavunga sent us that report.
And Jane, we've got lots of reactions pertaining this particular story. And when I look on our Facebook page, Brian, a photo from Cameroon, says what the president of Zimbabwe has just done is evil.
He goes on to say he wants war, not peace. Whenever nurses go on strike, the state should immediately look into the issue. These are people who take care of people's life. They must be treated with care.
And there is another one called Taha. I think if the government is following the principles of democracy, then it has to listen to its people's problem and seek for resolution. Because, Jane, sometimes it's really difficult to know if the government is on the wrong or the nurses, because also the nurses need pay.
Yes. And like
they
we had
the money.
And like we heard from that report, sometimes they go for months without pay.
Absolutely.
And John says, I am a Zimbabwean. Though some of those nurses failed people of Zimbabwe, they sacrificed their patients and a lot have died through the negligence. So I also propose that some be judged for murders.
And another one, we don't have the name, but he is in South Africa. He says Mnangagwa and his government are undermining the workers' rights.
Mixed feelings over there. Continue the conversation. We shall certainly be happy to share your opinion.
Speaking out.
Now, social media has been a tool of communication and connection among friends and families. Billions of pictures are posted on different platforms on a daily basis. But it has its bad side too, with pedophiles using it as a means of communication to sexually exploit children online.
In Kenya, parents are still in shock after some nasty images of their children were shared online. This has brought about a conversation on nudity and pornography among teens, leading to a hashtag Ifikiwazi, meaning parents are informed. Rhoda Odhiambo in Nairobi filed us this report.
Kenyans on Twitter are an angry lot. This time round, it's not about politics, but nude photos of young teenagers circulating online. Coined under the hashtag Ifikiewazazi, loosely translated to mean let it get to the parents, people behind it wanted parents of these young people to know exactly what their children are up to when they're not watching. The pictures show the rot among young people in the society, with keyboard experts blaming their parents for not raising them well. Even as the blame game moved from parents to the community at large, one of the girls shared a video saying why Kenyans should mind their own business.
If I decide to show off my body, like it's mine, I will show it off till the day I die.
Her comment did not go down well with event planners and photographers in the country. Douglas Okidi, who works for Real Time Events, says since the photos went viral, doing a photo shoot in any park in Nairobi is proving to be quite a challenge.
The police, the cops are out there cracking each and everyone who's doing photography, like a legit one. The young Turks are doing nudes, which is so embarrassing to the society.
This comes after 10 young people were arrested and released after being caught in the act of taking obscene pictures at Nairobi's Michuki Park. Central Police OCPD Robinson Thuku says they have launched a manhunt for those behind the nasty images being shared online.
Those things should not go to social media because they are obscene and it's a crime by itself. The parents of these kids and others of the same intention, that they have a responsibility to take care of their children. Whenever they leave their houses, they should know where they are going.
These shocking photos were also shared online. The same time, a Dutch organization called Terre des Hommes released an assessment study stating that many Kenyan children are being sexually exploited online. One of the first rising forms of abuse was children engaging in live video conversations with pedophiles.
We do not want to demonize the internet. The growth of ICT is a good thing, but there's the dark side of it as far as children are concerned. Some of the parents do not think that online sexual exploitation is as bad as regular child sexual exploitation. It is equally bad. Most of the children are equally affected, you know, psychologically, their feelings of self-worth and dignity, they feel dirty, they are ashamed of it.
In order to deal with this growing trend, the report recommends the passing of the Cybercrimes Bill, which is yet to be debated by Kenyan lawmakers. Ezekiel Mutua from the Kenya Film and Classification Board says once enacted, the law will change the narrative of how to apprehend these predators who are slowly outsmarting them.
Research shows that kids who are continually exposed to harmful content, violent content, become harmful in their lives. And while the government cannot police every home, but there is need for us to raise the level of conversations in the interest of protecting our children.
If passed, persons found guilty under this act risk paying a 20 million shilling fine or be jailed for a term not exceeding 25 years.
Rhoda Odhiambo there for us in Nairobi, Kenya. And this particular topic is still trending on Twitter under the hashtag Ifikiewazazi, a Swahili word meaning in English, parents be informed, because nude photos of teen teens and pornography material is all over the internet.
Not a pleasant experience.
Absolutely.
Use on. Now, if you are in the US and you think about film, the first thing that comes to your mind is Hollywood. And if you are in Asia, then your mind draws to Bollywood. In Africa, the equivalent is Nollywood. It is a place where young people dream to make a career in the film industry look up to.
For instance, Jane Ugonji has a dream. The young woman who lives in Nigeria's economic hotspot, Lagos, wants to become an actress. To achieve that dream, she has already joined the Royal Arts Academy, a drama school which has been training future actors and actresses. Nollywood has got so successful that it is providing more and more job opportunities within Nigeria. Catherine Gansler went to find out more.
Come on, form a circle quickly.
Circle, guys.
All right, Sheriff game. All right, everybody say bang.
Bang! Wilson Kemi Adebayo stands in the middle of 20 students. They all listen carefully to their teacher, who is a well-known film producer and director in Nigeria. In today's class, the students have to swap their roles very quickly and get less than a minute to prepare for the next one. Now it's Jane Izine Ogoji's turn. Adebayo explains what she should do.
Yeah, so you've just found out that he's having another child by another woman, and you are confronting him. And your objective is to make him realize that what he has done is terrible, and you are in shock, you're hurt, you're in pain.
24-year-old Jane and her classmate Binga close their eyes. Then Jane's face becomes distorted, and she almost starts crying.
18 years! And I live to see the day you tell me of seeing another woman.
While watching her, nobody would actually doubt that her husband had just cheated on her. The young woman acts in a very convincing way. Only a few minutes later, during a quick break, Jane smiles again and is satisfied with her performance.
Talent, it's talent. But what makes you different from the other people is you trying to know the basics of your craft. So I thought, fine, since I have a talent in acting, it wouldn't be bad to just come get to know more about it. So make it professional. So that's why I'm here.
Jane is taking a 3-month course. Tuition and registration cost a little bit more than $300 US, plus accommodation, practical materials and books. But the most difficult part was neither paying the fees nor passing the entrance exam, but convincing her parents. Like many families in Nigeria, they want their children to become lawyers, doctors or engineers, but not actors, explains Jane.
My mom has always been very, very supportive, but my father had an issue with it. But lately, he's like, okay, there's nothing he can do. So he's like, okay, this is your choice. This is what you want to do. Yeah, fine, I support you.
The lack of support is also to do with the image of Nollywood. In the 1990s, when the Nigerian industry started to emerge, the productions had to be as cheap as possible. Films were often shot in inexpensive hotels, actors were hardly paid. So, no wonder, they were known for poor results, remembers M.M. Isong Misodi, who is the founder of the Royal Arts Academy.
At first, nobody really took it seriously. People say Nollywood was like an accident waiting to happen. But over the years, it had improved.
That means there's also a higher demand for trained actors nowadays. Skills and education.
A report by Katrin Gensler.
To follow your own dreams or your parents' wishes. That's the topic we are also covering on the 77% this week. And we got a lot of comments on our Facebook page. And Iyekelo Bega Waseni says the industry has actually grown. They are on the right path. Most parents don't mind their kids or children in the entertainment industry, although some raise eyebrows.
And that's exactly what Michael says, that most people in Nollywood field are there because of unemployment in the country.
Absolutely. And Jane, did you follow your dream or your parents?
Well, I followed my dream, but that's all we had time for. Thank you for tuning to Africa Link. I'm Jane Ayeko Kumet.
And my name is Jane Nyinge. Bye for now.